The eyes of the world were on two South African court cases this week. Oscar Pistorius was back in the North Gauteng High Court to be sentenced or resentenced for the murder of his girlfriend, Riva Steenkamp, after his initial manslaughter conviction, for which he served 10 months of the 5-year sentence, was upgraded to murder upon appeal. Red-faced Pistorius was asked to walk across the courtroom with his prosthetic legs, as his advocate Barry Roux appealed for leniency for the former Paralympic. He will be sentenced on the 7th of July. And in Cape Town court, 21-year-old Henry Breda was released on a 100,000 rand bail. He's charged for the murder 18 months ago of his mother, father and brother, as well as his attempted murder of his sister at the luxurious Dazelle's golf estate in Stellenbosch. They were axed to death, and according to the state, his family's blood was found on his white socks and shorts. We discussed these cases with legal expert attorney Marnie Witz. Marnie, good morning to you and welcome to the program.
No, morning to you, Leon. Morning to the listeners.
Thank you very much for joining us.
And your pleasure.
Now, Marnie, let's start with the Oscar Pistorius case. Your overall impressions of the extremely emotional testimony of especially Riva's father?
Look, I think that was very, very, very telling. I mean, any person or any parent who unfortunately has lost a child, I think he really got it across. And, I mean, he got his feelings across. The presiding judge would see the impact, which is what the state wanted, on what happens to the family and the victims of a very, very serious crime. And I think that Barry Roux was very, very clever and very correct not to cross-examine him. Why dispute that evidence? I mean, the evidence is there. You're not going to say anything to the contrary. You're not going to rebut that evidence. And that evidence will stand, and the judge can now see for herself the unfortunate impact in a terrible tragedy, which I think affects both families, but more particularly the family of the deceased in these circumstances, what has actually happened arising out of the shooting.
While you've spoken about Barry Roux and he's a very clever move in that regard, was it also a strategic move from Barry Roux not to let Pistorius take to the stand in his own defense?
No, that's probably one of the best moves and one of the most clever strategic moves ever, because what your listeners need to know is that when you give evidence in mitigation of sentence, and knowing the way that Harry Knell and the state would behave in those circumstances, he wouldn't have even asked him about his disability and his mitigating circumstances, and that he's now a person who's been in custody and been severely impacted and affected as a person. You can go straight back into the merits of the case, the actual conviction, and that is what normally happens when it comes to sentence. And he would have tried to put the final nail into Mr. Pistorius on the merits to try and get him to admit that this was not only intentional but that he had direct intention. So it was very clever strategically to lay a basis that his client was in a position to give evidence to show remorse and penitence, which is what the court requires from the person themselves, because he knew that Harry Nell would go straight back into the merits and would ignore everything else because that evidence is already there. He couldn't do anything further with it, so that was a very, very good move tactically and very, very correctly done, because he would have gone straight back and who knows, maybe a different version would have come out this time. So you don't want to do further damage to your client.
Yes, interesting. He also seemed to have played the sympathy card with the decision to let Sir Pistorius walk around the court on his stumps. But in a sense, is that not a desperate measure from the side of the defense?
No, not at all. I think, as you see, there's a minimum sentence that's now applicable that your listeners need to know. Now that you've been found guilty of murder, there's a minimum sentence of 15 years for a first offender and a maximum sentence of 20 years. The only way that the presiding officer, the judge, or any presiding officer can deviate from the minimum sentence, which has been there since 1998. Every year on the 1st of May, even though it's a public holiday, it's Workers' Day, the legislature just extend the minimum sentence to curb serious and violent crimes, for example, murder. It covers all the very serious crimes, murder, rapes, armed robberies, murders and other matters where public officials, policemen, etc. are involved or victims. And his minimum sentence gets extended every year. So the judge is faced with what the legislator says. They say if it is a murder, even if you're a first offender, it doesn't matter who you are, the minimum is 15 years. The only way that a presiding officer, judicially and in terms of the discretion can deviate from the minimum sentence is if there are substantial and compelling. So substantial and compelling means you really have to show something really, really substantial and compelling. So yeah, you're showing the disability. You're saying to the judge, look, let me show you the real disability, not what Professor Derman and other witnesses have said, how paraplegics live and how they have to adapt and try and move in society. Let me show you the real person who you're going to sentence. And that's exactly what Barry Roux did. So the judge can now see what the position is and then take this into account and say, well, is that substantial and compelling? He has to live with this disability. He's going to have to try and adapt if I give him a direct prison sentence. So she's now seen with her own eyes, and I think the whole world has now seen exactly what the position is, how a disabled person is without their prostheses. So I think from that point of view, that's definitely substantial and compelling and would allow any presiding officer to say, well, if I'm giving direct imprisonment, how many years do I go for the minimum of the 15? And I obviously have to take off the 1 year that is already set, so it would be less than the 15. But do I take anything else off if I give direct imprisonment? Because look at this person in front of me. I'm now dealing with useful human material. It's a tragedy. He's been found guilty. I've got no other choice, but I now have to exercise my discretion. Do I go with the legislature says, or do I find that this is substantial and compelling? And I think that's exactly what they did.
How difficult is it going to be for Judge Thokozile Masipa to resentence him? Will she ignore in totality the evidence given at Pastoris's previous appearance before her?
No, not at all. Look, I mean, we all know the judge. I know the judge personally. She was my pupil in 1991. She worked under me as an advocate. She's been on the bench a long time. She's been there about 18, 19 years. She'll give a very fair and balanced sentence. She'll look at everything. She'll take all the elements of sentence into account. She'll take the interests of society, the seriousness of the offence, the personal circumstances. She'll blend it with a measure of mercy, and I've got no doubt she'll give a fair and balanced sentence, taking everything into account together with the requirements of the legislature and the minimum sentence, and see whether or not they are substantial and compelling. And I've got no doubt she'll heed what the Supreme Court of Appeal said. Look, when he gets sentenced, because we can't sentence him, we're sending him back to be sentenced by the presiding judge. Just remember, there's already a year that he's been in custody, so that should be taken into account. So I've got no doubt that it'll be a fair and balanced sentence.
Any speculation?
No, I'm not really open to the realms of speculation, but I've always said right from the very beginning, I always said that it was going to be a murder conviction on dolus eventualis. It turned out I was correct. And I've always said that it's going to be a term of direct imprisonment, a substantial term of direct imprisonment. But, you know, it's up to the judge to decide and use her discretion and all the various tools, case law, see what the legislature says and give a fair and balanced sentence. And I think that's all the public and both families really need, closure, finality, and maybe to try and get on what's left of their lives. It's been a terrible tragedy for both the families, more importantly that of the deceased, who will never see their child again. And I think really at the end of the day, everybody wants to see justice, that it's seen to be done, as they always say, in the proper terminology. That's all everybody wants to see. Was justice seen to be done? And I think our judiciary has done us proud. I mean, it's been really something to see for the listeners and the viewers that have been watching it. They've seen our courts work, and they've seen that you get a fair day in court. And we've got a strong and independent judiciary. There's no political interference. Everybody does what they're supposed to do. And doing a trial and being in a matter like that, it's not easy for all the parties concerned. But everybody's now seen how it really works. It's not an American television show. This is unfortunately reality. And it's been a terrible tragedy, I think, for everyone, but it's opened everyone's eyes to how justice operates. And I think everybody will see justice has been seen to be done. The state were not satisfied and believed that their rights had been impacted. They have the right of appeal, and that applies to every single person in South Africa. You've got your constitutional right to a fair trial, and if you feel from either side, the state or the as an accused or from the defence, you have got your right to appeal. And we've seen our courts work. We've seen the Supreme Court of Appeal. We've seen our Constitutional Court in action. And fortunately, as things go, I still think we're very fortunate to have a very strong and a very independent judiciary. So from that point of view, I'm, as a legal practitioner, very happy.
Then we have the Henry van Breda case. Why did it take authorities 18 months to charge him where there seemed to be so much evidence against him?
You know, I don't know. I've only been following a little bit in the dispatches in the media. You know, you have to be very careful with matters of that nature. You have to make sure that all your forensic and all your ballistic evidence all matches up before you decide to charge a person. On the outside and looking at it initially, it looked like there could only be one suspect and one person. But the point is, it takes a long time to do the DNA testing, blood testing, to make sure that you've got everything in order, get all your statements. There was also the problem, unfortunately, of the sister or the young daughter who was very severely injured, who seems to have made some type of really rapid improvement, but one doesn't really know what her mental state is, even though she seems to be coping and functioning, and she would obviously be a key and a vital witness. And you have to really make sure. You don't want to land up like with the Dewani incident, where on the outside it looked like it had to be Mr. Dewani, but at the end, when one looked at the evidence and tested the evidence, unfortunately the state case just didn't meet up. So you've got to be very, very careful in matters of this nature to see that everything ties up and that you seem to think, because at the end of the day, other than the daughter, we don't know, or the sister, we don't know whether she'll be a witness or not, and whether she'll be an eyewitness and remembers, because it seems her memory was severely impacted. It's again one of circumstantial evidence. The same in the Pistorius matter. You've got to put all the facts together, put all the evidence together, and try to build up a case, even though it looks on the outside that it's a slam dunk. So I think that's why it's taken so long.
Mani, we really appreciate your time on Radio Islam with the insight that you share with us. Thank you very much.
No, only a pleasure, and just wish all your listeners a happy and peaceful Ramadan, what's left.
Thank you very much. We appreciate
only
it.
Only a pleasure.
Thank you. Have a good day. Bye.
Bye.
This is Mani Witz, expert, a legal expert and attorney, speaking to us about Oscar and the recent sentencing. Also, you will be chatting to us about the other big case that dominates the Western Cape.